Welcome to Foresight Friday Roundup, Foresight Health's podcast series for healthcare revolutionaries. Outcomes matter, customers count, and value rules. Hello again, everyone. This is Dave Berta, news editor at Foresight Health. On today's episode of Foresight Friday Roundup, we're going to talk about innovation in medicine and in medical technology. It's one of our favorite topics here on Foresight Friday Roundup. So today, we're going to talk about Rock Health's new quarterly report on digital health technology funding, a new Deloitte survey of physicians on what technologies they want, and the Cleveland Clinic's new list of the top 10 medical innovations for 2021. To resolve this clash of market versus medicine are Dave Johnson, founder and CEO of Foresight Health, and Gary Bisbee, co-founder of the Health Management Academy. Dave, Gary, how are you guys doing this morning? Can it get any crazier?
I'm fine, and I'm not only sure it can get crazier, I'm sure it will. We're serving extra portions of fruitcake this year.
Gary?
Good morning. Happy Friday. I'm well. Thank you. And yeah, I think Dave's probably right. It will get crazier, but boy, it's enough right now for me. I'd like to see things settle down a bit.
That would be nice. All right. Before we talk about innovation, let me ask you guys about your experience with med tech. Dave, what medical technology have you seen your doctors use that you haven't seen them use before?
Well, probably my ignorance, but I'd never seen the fingertip monitors that measure oxygen saturation levels in the blood. Incredible technology and one of the best indicators for COVID. And the best of, thing of all is they only cost $20. So we now have one at home.
Oh, great, great. Gary, any new med tech that your doctors are using that surprised you?
Well, thankfully, I haven't had much exposure to my doctors, which is the best news of all. Clearly, I see members of my family using video for a variety of different things to connect with their doctors. So that's probably horse and buggy relative to what we'll be talking about here in a minute. But I do see that.
Yeah, for me, the last time I saw my internist, he Googled my symptoms to come up with a diagnosis. And I thought, hey, I could do that, you know?
But, yeah, right. There's a confidence builder right there.
Right, right. So at least he had Wi-Fi, so that's a good sign, I guess. Let's talk about all the things that happened this week with digital health technology and medical innovation. Dave, Rock Health came out with its third quarter report on venture capital funding of digital health technology companies. What jumped out at you in terms of funding and where that money is going?
2020 is already a record year for venture funding in digital healthcare. This is what happens when a long-term trend gets turbocharged. COVID-19 is breaking down barriers to digital and virtual healthcare services. The marketplace is responding with force. Julie Yu, the respected analyst at Andreessen Horowitz, describes this year's investment activity in digital health as, quote, bonkers, unquote. First, the long-term trend. Over the last 10 years, venture investing in digital health has grown from $1 billion in 2011 to an estimated $12 billion this year. At $9.4 billion through three quarters, 2020, as I said earlier, is already a record year, breaking the previous high of $8.2 billion in 2018. The growth is being driven by mega deals. There have been 24 of them, greater than $100 million in three broad categories. Virtual on-demand care delivery, R&D enablement, and by the way, John Cairns of Cain Brothers and I are distributing a commentary this month on this topic. And thirdly, and finally, fitness and wellness. Zwift, the home training app, has had the largest raise, $450 million in round C financing, reflecting another trend, greater concentration in venture investments in digital health. Institutional and corporate investors continue to predominate. Average deal size of $30.2 million is 50% greater than in 2019 when it was $19.7 million. The IPO and M&A markets are opening up, and that's encouraging even more investment. Looking forward, the market is signaling quite loudly that healthcare's future will increasingly be in asset-light, digital, retail, and consumer-oriented companies. Traditional asset-heavy companies should be afraid, very afraid. But it's a good news story for the rest of us.
Thanks, Dave. Gary, what does the funding level say to you? And where does that money go? Is that surprising you in any way?
Not really. There's a lot of money around, and not just in healthcare, by the way. So the investors are out looking for opportunities, looking at healthcare. It's 20% of the GDP, so a fifth of our economy. The gaps are, we've talked about that on this show many, many times, but the existing providers haven't done a good job of fulfilling the needs of their consumers. And then you've got this growing over 65 crowd that are looking for an opportunity to live forever. Consumer convenience is taking over, and that's a natural for digital health, right? When you talk about real estate, you always talk about location, location, location. And I think in investing these days in healthcare, it's consumer convenience, consumer convenience, consumer convenience. So I don't think it's a surprise. I think we will continue to see, really regardless of the strength of the markets, I think we're going to continue to see substantial investment with new venture companies as well as existing companies. I mean, we haven't really talked about that, but if you look at the Walmarts, the CVSs, the Walgreens, the Amazons, that doesn't always hit the charts in terms of investment dollars, but they are investing significantly in this space.
Got it. Dave, anything to add to Gary's comments?
I'm just encouraged by innovation generally. I just finished Zeke Emanuel's new book, Which Country Has the Best Healthcare System? And, you know, after he went through all of the faults of the U.S. system, he did mention that it leads the world in innovation. And the U.S. system is really upside down in a way. Since its origins, really back in the 1890s with the opening of Johns Hopkins, American healthcare, rightly so, has focused on treating acute disease and continues to do so predominantly. And then we started to notice in the 80s and really notice in the 90s the explosion of obesity and chronic disease to the point where treating chronic disease is probably as important or more important than treating acute disease. And we know how important it is to treat acute disease. So we need to rebalance. And I think innovation of the type we're talking about today will be the force that leads America to get this balance right. You know, unleashing the American innovation machine on chronic disease is part of what's driving this investment in digital health. And it's exactly what we need as a country. It'll make us more productive. It'll make us happier, and it'll improve the overall health and well-being of communities across the country.
Great. Thanks, Dave. Now let's talk about doctors and where they fit into this equation. Gary, Deloitte surveyed nearly 700 doctors and asked them about virtual health and digital health technologies. Now, what are the doctors saying that they need from the market to do their jobs better?
Yeah, very interesting. So there were four findings in this Deloitte survey. I'll quickly tick off the four findings. One is interoperability. I think we all know what that means. Optimized workflow was the second, what they called intelligent augmentation. They're talking about support for the decision-making process of the physicians. And the fourth was data security. Now, the interesting point about all of that is the one thing that's common is data, and secondarily, ambulatory care. The ambulatory care side fits back to what we were just talking about, I think, with investment in digital health. But data is the key, and we have talked on this show before about the High Tech Act that was passed 10 years ago that basically invested $35 billion of government money in digitizing medical care. Most of that money was spent really on the inpatient side. And so what we're seeing now with the digital health focus is on the outpatient or non-acute care side. So the findings of the Deloitte survey were not remarkable, but I think were important if you look beneath the covers. And beneath the covers here is data, and that's common to what the physicians want, which is to capitalize on the digitization of medical care in general. And the whole digital health discussion that we just had fits right into that.
Dave, what are your thoughts on what the Deloitte survey found and then also on the Cleveland Clinic's list of the top 10 medical innovations for next year? Is there any connection?
Data Libre. Imagine my fist in the air, right? Data wants to be free and free-flowing. Technology should make life easier, not harder. And unfortunately, in healthcare, the health tech to now, particularly for doctors, has made their daily work more burdensome, not easier. And they're crying out for technology to be their friend, not their enemy. I'd focus on that sort of third category that Gary mentioned, maybe dive in there a little bit on intelligent augmentation. Astro Teller, a grandson of Edward Teller, the inventor of the hydrogen bomb, is head of moonshots at Google. That's a pretty good title, right? And he says for the first time in human history, the pace of innovation is faster than human beings' ability to adapt. And really, the only way around that is through human-machine collaboration. And we're right on the cusp of 5G, which is going to dramatically increase our ability to aggregate, curate, and apply data, engage users. So I think that's where we're going to see over time the biggest improvement. Now, with regard to the clinic, the normal impressive range of therapeutic and service breakthroughs, you know, universal hepatitis C treatments to smartphone connectivity with pacemakers. Just really impressive. But what really struck me about the list was item number 7 of the top 10, which was regulatory change for virtual care, which is not something you think of as, you know, a scientist in a laboratory creating or an engineer in an incubator, you know, coming up with the greatest new thing. But it does speak to the fact of how important it is to have pro-market, level field, regulatory and payment policies. And what they're specifically referring to is how the government's loosened up on payment for various types of virtual care and practicing at top of license and so on. And that has unleashed this whole wave of new models for treating people more efficiently and better. It's really exciting.
Gary, anything to add to Dave's comments?
Well, I agree with them. I was speaking with Roxana Gapster yesterday, the CEO at WellSpan, and talking to her about, will the health insurers pay for virtual care or will they pay an adequate rate for virtual care? And she said that they are working with their insurers on innovations and coming up with partnership and an agreement for the insurers paying for innovations in telehealth. And I thought that was really a creative way to go at merging the interests of the patient, the delivery system, and the health insurers. And it builds on what Dave was talking about with innovations as the key over the next several years.
Got it. Thanks, Gary. Yeah, I think the item on the Cleveland Clinic list that got me was the smartphone connecting to your pacemaker. I mean, I get a lot of robocalls on my smartphone. I don't know if I want those going to my pacemaker. So,
I think your fears are warranted.
Let's talk about next week. Gary, what's on the lips of healthcare wonks everywhere next week? What do you think?
I think the debate or lack thereof will be the casual water cooler discussion next week.
Which is what? About the president?
Yeah, president, we had the vice presidential debate. I guess they're not going to have the debate. We're going to have Trump out campaigning, I guess, with his doctor nearby to make sure he doesn't relapse. And we've got Biden doing what he's doing. And the whole thing, as we talked about at the beginning, is incongruous at best.
Dave, what do you think the big story in healthcare will be next week?
I think we're going to talk about who they're going to kidnap next. I don't know if that's a healthcare story, but it's certainly a national story.
Yeah.
The policy dialogue continues to center on access, but we need to get back to discussing affordability. This week, I flipped through the GoFundMe medical campaign pages. And, you know, each individual story is inspiring, but in the aggregate, it's just tragic that so many Americans have to go online to beg for money to pay for essential medical treatments. It's just really tragic. So affordability and access go together. They aren't separate and apart.
Well, thanks, Dave. Thanks, Gary. And I appreciate a great discussion on medical innovation. Although I think, Gary, you said we all want to live forever. And if that's true, I'm going to have to come up with a lot more topics for the
past. Yeah, well said.
All right. If you'd like to learn more about the topics we discussed today, please visit our website at foresighthealth.com. And to listen to all of our podcasts, including today's episode, they're available on iTunes and Spotify. Thanks again for listening. I'm Dave Burda for Foresight Health.